Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Africa's parliament votes to close the Israeli embassy in South Africa.
The ANC in government is not in favor of closing the diplomatic ties with Israel, but the ANC had no choice but to agree with the EFF on this.
A Somali journalist says the fight against Al-Shabaab is weakened by a fragmented security. Child refugees are wrongfully classified amid a migrant surge from Africa to Spain. We'll get a technical explanation for the floods that are ravaging East Africa. Liberia investigates an alleged attack on supporters of the winning party.
The incident which took place November 20 has now reported 3 deaths. Of those 3 deaths, 2 males, 1 female, as confirmed by medical doctors at the John F. Kennedy Medical Center.
And a young pilot of Liberian descent embarks on an historic solo flight from North America to Africa in a single-engine plane. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A political analyst says he does not think South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa really wants to close the Israeli embassy in South Africa. Professor Sipho Sipe, former Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support at the University of Zululand, says President Ramaphosa may be playing to the gallery to win public support because of support for the Palestinian cause is strong in South Africa. This comes as South Africa's parliament voted on Tuesday to close the Israeli embassy in Pretoria and suspend all diplomatic relations until there is a ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas. Professor Sipe tells me that the ruling African National Congress supported the resolution introduced by the Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, with modifications.
The EFF is the one that is bold and courageous to table that motion. And the ANC found itself in a corner because at the level of cabinet, at the level of, there is still a firm wanting to keep diplomatic relations. But the having taken and given that we are going towards the election, the ANC chose to be expedient to allow the motion and support the motion of the EFF. But what they did was to put a rider to the original motion, whereas the EFF was calling for a closing of the embassy and cutting diplomatic ties. The ANC changed that and diluted that message by saying, until such time that there is a ceasefire. So effectively expressing the position of government. So one must make a distinction between the position of the ANC in parliament and the position of government. So the ANC in government is not in favor of closing the diplomatic ties with Israel. But the ANC had no choice but to agree with the EFF on this.
Professor, as you said, President Ramaphosa has been critical of Israel because of the Gaza war. Are you saying that now President Ramaphosa may be hesitant to support what the parliament has done?
Well, he's very hesitant. It is easy for Ramaphosa to play to the gallery and try to win support because at the moment, there is almost a universal support for Palestine. And the ANC has always supported Palestine. But at the government level, you often find the ANC still playing and working with Israel. So to cut ties with Israel completely would have been very difficult for Ramaphosa. One must also remember that Ramaphosa owes his presidency to a lot of support by Jewish communities. A lot of Jewish communities and individuals have put a lot of money in support of his presidency. So he understands that. He is a captured man. So there is a certain way he can speak when he's at the rally. But when it comes to government, he has to remember that he has benefited enormously from the largesse of the Jewish Board of Deputies. So, in a sense, he always finds himself wanting to take a middle position. Hence, the hesitation at the level of government in cutting all the diplomatic relations.
Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg, South Africa. A Somali journalist says the fight against Al-Shabaab by President Hassan Sheikh Mohamed can be described as one step forward, one step back. Reuters quoted the president on Tuesday as saying that his country has 1 year to expel Al-Shabaab from the country. Somalia has been fighting against the rebel group since 2006. President Mohamed said in August that he wanted to eliminate Al-Shabaab by early next year. Abdul Ahmed Mumi is the Secretary General of the Somali Journalist Syndicate, an umbrella organization for the country's media. He tells me that the major issue is the fragmentation of the Somali security forces along client lines.
Somalia has been on active war on Al-Shabaab for over 15 years now. So this kind of operations are nothing new. First of all. And then if you remember, after the attack of Hotel Hayat in Mogadishu in August last year, Somali president announced the security operation on Al-Shabaab, the militant group. But 1 year later, there are no major significant step forward against Al-Shabaab. And he has been in central Somalia for 2 months conducting the operation, is only to return back to the capital with more than 10 towns and villages withdrawn by security forces. And there have been massive attacks by Al-Shabaab on government security camps in central and southern parts of the country. So this has been one thing that a lot of security analysts have been describing: one step forward, two step backward.
He says that the focus now is to eliminate the residual of Al-Shabaab, but he thinks that this is being made difficult by the current, what he called, deadly flooding.
The current deadly flooding is a setback for the humanitarian wise and livelihood of the citizens. That's reality, and it has also affected this ongoing security operations. But in reality, that's not the major issue now. The major issue in Somalia is the country is fragmented, deficient. The northeastern region, Puntland, is struggling with political violence because of the delayed elections. Puntland and Mogadishu are not at good terms. This has also affected the security operation. Mahmoud and his leadership, that is why the Somali people are not trusting his system. And in addition to that, Somali security forces are fragmented, divided in clan-wise. And what I think is more important now, if any, is to reconcile Somalis and to work on corruption-free. That will also lead to the way to rebuilding the Somali army, which can form a united army. That is, I think, what Somalia need.
What do you think the president means about encouraging dialogue? Is the government open to dialogue with Al-Shabaab?
I think he's referring to ongoing long-time rumors which state that there might be Qatar brokered negotiations between Somalia and Al-Shabaab, and quite some time with the involvement of major Western countries. That could be something that he is mentioning.
Abdullah Mumi is the Secretary General of the Somali Journalist Syndicate, an umbrella organization for media in Somalia. He was speaking with us from London. Somalia's disaster agency says floods caused by heavy rains that began early October have killed 50 people and displaced more than 500,000 others. The aid group Save the Children says at least 46 people have died in flood-related incidents in Kenya since the rainy season began less than a month ago. For more on the flooding situation in East Africa, viewers Douglas Umpuga reached Abubakar Saleh Babika, the technical coordinator for infrastructure at the World Meteorological Organization's regional office for Africa in Addis Ababa.
The recent flood in East Africa is a very serious incident, especially in Kenya, where many of the roads were cut and destroyed, many of infrastructure destroyed. Even Nairobi Airport at some point has been affected by the heavy rainfall. So far, about 700 people has been displaced from their residential area. And the impact is serious. It has a huge impact on infrastructure and, of course, on human lives and livelihood.
Are floods on this scale unusual in the region? And what do you think is the cause?
The current flooding, it is unusual, and it is due to what we say El Nino. We have now El Nino episode, and El Nino, and another phenomena also called Indian Ocean Dipole. So El Nino is a phenomena that happened in the eastern part of the Pacific Ocean, in which the temperature of the eastern part of the Pacific Ocean get warmer than usual. So when it is warmer than usual, we say this is El Nino. And when it is colder than usual, we say this is a La Nina. And there is a neutral phase in between. And usually this cycle take between 2 to 7 years to happen, the cycle. So El Nino usually is associated with heavy rainfall and floods over East Africa. And the impact now is also is a combination between El Nino and the Indian Ocean Dipole. And the Indian Ocean Dipole is also another variation in sea surface temperature, in which the temperature of the ocean is warmer near the East Africa coast and colder in the eastern part of the Indian Ocean near the coast of Sumatra. And those two factors, El Nino and India and positive Indian Ocean Dipole, are the driver of the current climatic extreme that is going on in the Horn of Africa, and especially in Kenya and part of Somalia.
The Horn of Africa is one of the most vulnerable regions to climate change, with weather events growing increasingly common and intense. Is there an explanation for this, and what do you think can be done about it?
The region of the Horn of Africa has been suffering from extreme event in the past few years. So, for example, the same area that is now undergoing flood, it has been under drought, severe drought, from 2020 up to 2022. And the reason was for the drought was a La Nina. So a La Nina has an opposite effect of El Nino. La Nina usually calls drought over the Horn of Africa. So the region has undergone a severe drought in which 5 consecutive seasons of rain has failed between 2020 and 2022. And these extremes are likely, those are part of the national variability, but it's usually exacerbated by the impact of climate change. We know that the global ocean absorbs 90% of the heat from global warming, and this heat, especially part of the tropical ocean, has been the most warming part, and especially the Indian Ocean. And these kind of warming in the ocean kind of change the behavior of the whole system, which lead to unusual event like this.
Abubakar Saleh Babika is the technical coordinator for infrastructure at the World Meteorological Organization's regional office for Africa in Addis Ababa. He spoke from Sudan with Douglas Mpuga. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, November 22nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A surge in the number of migrants making the treacherous journey from West Africa to Spain's Canary Islands is straining local authorities. Human rights groups say many child migrants are being wrongly classified as adults by Spanish police, putting them at increased risk. Henry Richwell reports.
Musa Camara is 15 years old. He was orphaned following a coup in his home country of Guinea. He chose to escape, spending 11 days at sea in a wooden boat on the treacherous journey from Senegal to the Spanish island of Tenerife, along with 240 other migrants. For half that time, he had no food or water. 20 people died in the crossing. When he arrived on October 27th, Spanish authorities classified Camara and his friend as adults rather than children. Camara said he told the staff at the migrant centre that they were 15 years old, but they didn't write that, he says. They took us as if we were adults. We are children, he said, but they brought us here. They betrayed us. Police sent the two boys to an old military base in Tenerife's mountains, where around 2,000 adult migrants await transfers to mainland Spain. Amnesty International found that 12 of 29 migrants they interviewed on the islands were children who had been incorrectly classified as adults. Amnesty's Virginia Alvarez.
We were talking with one girl. She was 17 and she was detained for 3 days with men and women in a place without any oversight by the authorities. She was sleeping on the floor.
A bone test is required to prove a migrant's age, but these can take months. Child migrants are given extra support to find residency and education until they turn 18. But if they are classed as adults, they receive little government help. Amnesty says treating child migrants as adults is illegal under Spanish law, and it subjects them to injustices.
If they are treated as adults, they can be expelled to their countries of origin.
So far this year, more than 32,000 migrants have arrived on the Canary Islands from West Africa, the highest since 2006. Local authorities say the Spanish government isn't doing enough to help.
Han dejado con 4.700 menores, con las ONGs y los recursos saturados.
Fernando Clavijo, the president of the Canary Islands regional government, says the Spanish authorities left them with 4,700 minors. He says NGOs and resources are saturated, creating difficulties because determining who is a minor and who is not a minor is not being done. Clavijo says it is taking at least 3 or 4 months, and there are adults in centres for minors and minors in centres for adults. Amnesty International is calling on Spain and the European Union to make sure that child migrants are properly screened and to provide safer routes for refugees. The Spanish government said it was conducting dozens of assessments on cases of suspected minors being housed at adult migrant camps. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
The Liberian National Police have arrested a suspect in connection with Monday night's alleged attack by a motor vehicle on supporters of the main opposition Unity Party at its headquarters. Denise Nipson reports from Monrovia.
On Monday night, while partisans of the Unity Party were celebrating the win of their standard bearer Ambassador Joseph Boakai, a vehicle plowed into the crowd, causing several casualties. The situation went viral with Liberians demanding the government to bring the perpetrator to book. Police spokesman Moses Carter on Tuesday offered an update.
The incident, which took place about 10 p.m. yesterday evening, November 20, has now reported 3 deaths. Of those 3 deaths, 2 males, 1 female, as confirmed by medical doctors at the John F. Kennedy Medical Center. Police investigation established the cause of the incident was due to a vehicle operator running into some supporters of the Unity Party who were celebrating victory at their headquarters. The operator, alleged suspect Lawrence K. Williams, has been arrested and is undergoing investigation.
President-elect Boakai pay a visit to the John F. Kennedy Hospital, where the victims who are his supporters are receiving treatment and where family members also gather. Following the rounds, President-elect Boakai walked outside the hospital to meet with and express empathy with weeping family members.
This was very unfortunate, but we work with the doctors. Yeah, like whenever we need help. Those that have died will work with their families too. This is something nobody planned, but I can assure you anything we can do to help.
One of the women spoke on behalf of all the affected families. She said one of the reasons they voted President Weah out of office was due to crimes with impunity. She hopes This will not happen in the Bwaka administration.
As we speak with you every night, we believe you. Papa, I beg you, they do who are really terrible that we voted angry way. They shouldn't start as soon as possible. We voted angry because we know what they do want to make me happy. Justice, our children, our brother. I want auntie, we won't know. What if pull that car out there and open that car door and just roll into people? We won't know what's happening. We don't want to leave that car. We don't want to leave that car.
The president-elect vowed that the matter will be investigated and that the police are already doing so. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nefsing in Monrovia, Liberia.
A young pilot of Liberian descent is currently making an historic solo flight from North America to Africa in a single-engine plane. Abner Yonle was born and raised in Liberia. His solo flight began October 27 in the U.S. state of Maryland. He has made stops in Canada, Greenland, Iceland, the Faroe Islands, the United Kingdom, France, and Spain. Abner reached Morocco on Sunday last night. He landed in Dakar, Senegal. From there, he will travel to Sierra Leone and finally to his native Liberia, where he is expected to arrive today, Monday. Abner tells me that the purpose of his adventure is to motivate young Africans to develop interest in aviation.
The motivation behind this venture is to bring awareness of general aviation to all my African brethren, to the youth of Africa. I was just in Liberia in April. I visited the airfield called Springfield, and I've noticed that, you know, you don't see any participation of a Liberian or just African as a whole. I didn't see anything like that. So even though I don't have a jet, I do have a single engine. I was planning on making the trip so I can be able to motivate my fellow Liberians and fellow Africans.
So when did you begin to fly?
The trip started October the 27th from Maryland, USA.
And the goal is what? To fly solo from North America to Africa, and then what?
The goal is to fly solo from North America to Africa, and like I said previously, is to bring in awareness to aviation. It's something, because I believe aviation brings, aviation expands. That's a saying. Now, with a mile of a road, you can drive a mile. But with a mile, you can use an airplane and go around the world. So I'm trying to bring that awareness to my people so that we can, you know, have something that we all can work around. You know, my goal is to bring the aviation community back into Liberia and, you know, bring that awareness so we can work towards it.
Now, do you own this plane that you're flying or?
Yes, sir, I do own the plane.
What is it like to fly alone? Do you take breaks or what do you do?
Yes, sir. So this plane, I don't have a bigger fuel tanks like the bigger jets or commercial to fly across the Atlantic. So I have my trip set up in a section. So from the U.S., I flew into Canada through a couple airports, crossed from Canada to Greenland. When I crossed Greenland, and then flew from Greenland to Iceland, Iceland to the Faroes, and then to the United Kingdom. So from Scotland to London, London to France, France to Spain, and now I'm currently in Morocco. So it was little stop here and there. Flying single gets boring, but I got this goal, so I'm determined to fulfill this. So that's how I keep pushing myself.
So you are in Morocco. From Morocco, where do you go? Straight to Liberia?
I am in Morocco. From Morocco, I'm flying to Senegal. From Senegal, I will be flying to Freetown or Sierra Leone. And then from Freetown, Sierra Leone, I will be flying to Monrovia.
This is fantastic. Congratulations again for your adventure, I would call it.
Thank you, sir.
Abner Yonle is a young pilot of Liberian descent. He spoke with us from Morocco. And that is it for this Wednesday, November 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming aboard with us this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
Thank you.